Hello, and welcome back to another episode of A Blessing in Divorce. Today, I have a very special guest. Her name is Lucy Lampe. I met her on Instagram, another one of those. I really love how we're able to connect with incredible humans through other platforms and meet people we might never have met, you know, otherwise in real life. So we are going to have a terrific conversation today. I'm recording this after our episode, so I can tell you right now, we talk about so many incredible things. So I will read you her bio in just a moment, but Lucy is a sex and relationship coach, and she shared very openly on social media, specifically Instagram, which is where I found her. I'm pretty sure she's on TikTok as well, about her relationship with her husband and how they developed emotional intimacy and closeness, and how they managed to create a safe space to be themselves and be free and expressive in their love and their sexuality in every way. And it really inspiring. And then I noticed in January that they were splitting up. She announced it on Instagram that they were no longer going to be together. And so I couldn't help it. I just had to reach out and see if I could talk to her about, you know, how they were going to navigate this divorce and some of the things that have been coming up for her. So we had a beautiful conversation, which I'll be sharing with you here. And yeah, I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. You can learn so much from her. We even start talking a bit about sexuality for, you know, for women as later in life, after decades of marriage, you know, children, and how that can be such an inhibitor in a way, like preventing us from exploring new relationships, for example, a fear of intimacy, physical intimacy, and things like that. So we talk about it all here. So let me tell you a little bit more about Lucy before we dive in. So Lucy Lampe is a mom of four, a trauma-informed sex and relationship coach, award-winning singer and songwriter, commercial actress, and print model. And she's three times author. Her writing has been featured in the Huffington Post, Forbes, Entrepreneur.com, CBS, and Fox. After overcoming an autoimmune disorder and embarking on a deep healing journey and spiritual awakening during her then husband's 2-year disability and depression, Lucy returned with a bold message of love, courage, and freedom. Professionally, she draws upon her studies and certifications in neurolinguistic programming, somatic experiencing, cognitive behavioral therapy, hypnotherapy, Reiki, counseling, EFT tapping, and her degree in exercise science to create unique, powerful programs and curricula for her clients and members. I am, of course, sharing all her details in the show notes. So let's get into the episode. Hi, Lucy, and welcome to my podcast, A Blessing in Divorce. I have been so, so excited about speaking with you today. So welcome.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I'm really happy to be here, and specifically around this topic. I love that your podcast is all about this.
Well, you know, it's funny, the name of the podcast was actually, it was my son who came up with it. We were sitting in, I was running some ideas by him. But it so perfectly sums up my experience, because the life that I developed or created for myself as a result of my divorce was a true blessing. Like it makes me grateful for the divorce. Not that I'm glad that I got divorced, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like it just, I was able to really move into a whole new life because of it. So it truly has been a blessing in divorce for me. Yeah. And so that was like the perfect name. For people who are listening to this, you've obviously heard the intro of Lucy before I get started here. But Lucy, one of the things that really drew me to you on Instagram before you started your divorce, which is what you're going through as well now, was, of course, the intensely intimate and incredible experience, at least to us watching, that you seem to be having with Ryan. And I believe you were having it until you weren't. So we were so drawn, or at least I was so drawn to that, to find that kind of depth within yourself so that you can also find it within each other, that intimacy that the two of you shared. So I guess, what happened?
The very shocking beginning of the end. So I think that also what you said, to piggyback on that a little bit, that word's always funny to me, but to continue that thought, is that it is because of the depth that I cultivated within myself that I was able to experience that depth of connection and passion with him So there is, this is why if you look back through the past multiple years, even before I started sharing about the relationship aspect and intimately relating to a partner, it begins, it truly does begin, and it all comes from that connection with ourselves. And deeper than that too, this connection to something deeper, something bigger. And so, you know, that inner sacred union. And what's really interesting for me to witness in the process of sharing our uncoupling, especially the first 6 weeks, was that how much, even though I repeatedly talk about inner sacred union, inner devotion to love, how much people still thought that this was in me because of my relationship. And so it's mind-boggling. So, but what began, there was a catalyst for us that really revealed, and there was no way around it, that revealed that he is going in one direction. And that's where he strongly, urgently felt the need to go. And if I were to follow him in that direction in life, I would be betraying myself. Mm-hmm. And so for years, I've been deep in this practice of getting out of my comfort zone and creating this magical third thing, right? That's not all just me and not all just him, but something that only the us component can really create. So how to do that and get out of my comfort zone while still honoring my heart. And so that is a skill in and of itself. It's an art. But when it came to this particular point on that day, I saw there's no way I can follow you there because that is a whole other, that's a whole other thing. And there are some sensitive mental health things, components to this that I'm not willing to sacrifice sacrifice myself in hopes that something would change or some help would be sought. So, you know, it's not our responsibility. I can love unconditionally and the relationship still has conditions. So a lot of lessons through these 17 years, for sure.
I'm sure. And you brought up so many interesting or relevant points when it comes to the uncoupling, to use your word. And, you know, the be willing to let go of someone because you can't go with them there, and to not necessarily blame them for needing to go there, that them going there is not a reflection on you. It's not a failure on your part. It's not I'm not good enough. I don't hear you saying anything like that. It's just, it's what he needed to do, and I can't go there with him. And I think, you know, it's something I hear so often. It's just, you know, I gave myself, I gave up everything. I sacrificed myself. I did everything he wanted, and it wasn't good enough. And I think because I don't believe that anyone ever really asks anyone to give up everything they are and everything they care about for them. You know, I don't think anybody goes into marriage saying, okay, you better give up everything, your entire life, like your mental health, your desires, your dreams, everything. That's the only way you can be with me. They actually fall in love with the person who has those dreams and desires and whatever. But for some reason, we feel we're supposed to let go. And I mean, that's a whole other topic. But I love that you were able to say to yourself, I can't go with you here. Like, I can't. I don't know how much he tried to convince you or if he just accepted, because he has obviously been on this journey with you.
He was very accepting. He was oddly accepting, because he knew, I think a part of him wanted as much to set me free as he wanted to set himself free. Because he knew I was never secretive about what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I was very open-hearted, very communicative, I said two things I devoted to never withholding, and that was my truth, and I would not withhold love. Mm-hmm. Because to that would be manipulation. I'm only going to love you in this way if you behave in this way. So I really learned how to love him unconditionally. But he did accept it. And that's what made it possible for us to uncouple the way that we did. Because there wasn't this resistance of like, no, come back to me.
Fighting for it. Why, you know, and again, like people will ask, why didn't you fight harder to keep him? Why didn't he fight harder to work with, you know, whatever. But, you know, so in this uncoupling or conscious uncoupling, which is really the path that you have chosen, can you just tell us, you know, I think a lot of people have heard of it. You know, we've heard of it because of Gwyneth Paltrow or whatever. She wrote a book about it once upon a time.
Is that who started it? I don't even
know if that's where it started. That's where I first heard it. But I'm not, you know, again, I think her journey, as I understood it, it certainly doesn't sound like yours. So I would love to, and I, again, I think things like that are defined by us individually as well, what it is to us. Everybody's going to do things differently. So would you share with us a little bit what that means to you and to Ryan and how it's working?
Yeah. So it's really the simplest way I can communicate or share is that it is bringing consciousness to the process of untethering from each other, because there is everything that has been combined or together or its own entity. It's a whole marriage, 17 years, a life built together, children, shared dreams, visions, and the slow crumbling of all of that, the dissolution of that. So there are a lot of conversations of, and Ryan and I were very, very open with each other about resentments when we felt unseen, unheard. So it's not like we had 17 years worth of backlog of resentment to bring to the surface. But even as open and communicative as we had been, there were things that we were like, oh, I didn't realize that I felt some type of way about this. So bringing this to the table, bringing this to the conversation, and just celebrating different eras of our relationship, celebrating who we've become, and also just the honest rage part of it. The rage for me really wasn't directed at him, because I saw the truth in what he needed. And it was true for him. That's him being in his integrity, following where he felt like his soul was calling him to go, as much as it hurt. But I wanted to blame him still. There were parts of me that were like, well, fuck you. You could have made a different choice. Like, why didn't you try harder? But look at, like, no matter what I've become, it's still not enough for you. It will never be this. It will never be what you want. So you really have to acknowledge those feelings to go through this process consciously, because there is no skipping over feelings. There is no trying to be nice when you just feel like a raging fire. And sometimes we were able to hold space for each other to just, blah, just, you know, get into that space. But for the most part, we did that on our own. And I would see him going into his own inner space and wailing, and I would be in my space and just going through my whole process. So it was a lot of creating space for feelings, conversations when they needed to happen, just kind of doing things for the last time, like holding hands for the last time, knowing this is it, having sex for the last time and knowing this is it. There's a lot of closure in these little, in these big, you know, symbolic releases along the way. And then finally, there's, of course, like when he actually left the house.
Yes.
There are certain things that, there are certain things that don't really hit until they're physically absent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you get to really let go on a whole other level, clean out the closet, take his stuff out, just take his sweaters off the rack. That was a bigger deal than I anticipated. For the kids too. They walk in and they thought, wow, something's missing here. Dad's shoes and sweaters. So it's just de-escalation and honoring the feelings as you go through each part of the process and having conversations with the kids too. So all of that.
It's, you know, and you bring up so many experiences that of course all of us go through as we go through divorce. And I actually remember when I finally cleaned out the closet, it took a while and we were not nearly as friendly, if you will, or doing it in the way that you were. It was very hostile. So it took me such a long time to almost have the courage to go in and just take all his stuff and put it in the bag and take it to him.
Yeah.
But I have to say, as much as, you know, the journey of doing that was sobbing in the closet as I was doing it, coming home afterwards, there was a sense of relief and an absence of an energy, because the energy between us was not good. It was not loving anymore. It was very unfriendly. There was such
an exhale.
Yeah, because all that stuff hanging there was just a daily, sometimes several times daily, reminder of the presence of something that was so negative, right? So hostile in my life. So, you know, I think it's, you know, ego, of course. You mentioned, you know, you get angry and why wasn't I enough? And I think this is such a common You know, why couldn't you have fought for us a little harder? Why didn't you resist whatever it was that you was pulling at you a little more? Like, mm-hmm. what about our history? Which is, of course, our ego talking, right? Because we identify with that place in life and we see our value in yeah. ourselves by being part of that couple, that marriage, that family, in that intact unit. It's hard to accept that we have the same value in a new format. How would you... You mentioned going within and raging and doing all the different things. What are some ways that you dealt with that, like the ego rising basically and going like, what the fuck, to, you know,
yeah.
and then talking her back down again? How did you do that?
Well, again, this is one of those things that was not a new practice during divorce. Mm. Literally the same things that I did during this process that I've been doing for years. Yeah. So every time we would have a conflict, and I would feel this seething rage. It's part of the human experience, right? So yeah. I learned that instead of just blah, giving it to him every time, that wasn't always the best thing to do, you know? So I would learn to come into my own space, which my own physical space right here in my office is one of those spaces, and just let the way that I experience it is just let the mother or the goddess or whatever aspect of that feminine fury that wants to do with work in me, just like bring it all to the surface.
Okay.
And so just deep feeling. I grew up being terrified of feeling, period. So I did not know how to feel. I was so disconnected from my emotions that I couldn't feel genuine happiness when it wanted to come up. It was just, everything was cut off. So through our relationship, I got to learn, because he's a very expressively feeling person, a deeply feeling person. And that brought that out in me. And I got to confront that. It was scary as hell because I didn't know that it felt like it would consume me whole, but I learned that it wouldn't.
What a
gift. I began to trust myself. Yes. I began to trust myself to be able to hold that and to be held in it by something bigger, and trust that the wave is always going to pass. I'm not going to drown in it. Mm-hmm. And then usually after the storm has passed, there's a deeper wisdom that I can connect with. So once the ego part has gotten her little Tasmanian devil spin and gone on her rant, then there's the energetic channels are more clear, and I can just choose to tune in deeper into. There are a lot of different ways that I've found to do this, but in a nutshell, tuning into where my body is speaking to me and where I'm connecting with that deeper source, love, and what is that telling me? And the truth that would come from that, I would bring to him. And it's not always pretty. It's not that it's a pretty package and he's going to be receptive. No, I learned how to do this within our relationship. And I brought that same thing into our uncoupling. So it's a lot of self, I would say self,
awareness,
maybe discipline isn't the word, but yeah. So it's a devotion to our own process is really what it is. And I go to there first and then I involve him in it.
Yeah. I love that. And I love that you are allowing, to use that word, I can't think of a better one right now, but allowing or giving permission, if you will, to feel the rage, the jealousy, the anger, the blame, like run through it and then clear it and then see what remains. So, you know, I definitely went on my own journey like that. Like I spent hours reflecting, I called it, sitting and basically sobbing and crying and just letting these feelings just, I suddenly remember something and I'm like, why did that happen? And why did I react the way I did? But I was constantly asking myself questions. That was my journey through that.
Yes.
Ego coming up, blaming. Why did I react the way I did? What was it that he said?
Could I have done better to prevent it?
Yeah. What was my role in the fight? What was my, or the conflict? What was my role in trying to make it pass? What was my role in my healing? Like, what did I do? Because I can really only be responsible for myself ultimately, right? Yes. We can blame, you know, we have so much of that. It's sort of in the Facebook group that I hold space for. And it, you know, there's so much of, yeah, but he was a narcissist, or yeah, but he cheated.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You know, cheating is a very destructive behavior and choice made by the other person. Yeah. It doesn't actually have anything to do with you. Your feelings that come up because of it are your own and valid. But yeah, like It's just, you know, we put so much emphasis and almost more value into their what they do than there is. Like,
yes, a lot more story. And but you know, a lot of it is, I find it when we ask, and there have been so many separations in January alone that have been shocking. There's a lot going on in the astrological, you know, collective energy, that which makes total sense, actually. But a lot of women want to, and my, one of my own daughters, who's a teenager going through her first big breakup, they want to blame themselves and say, well, if only I would have been more sexual or more this or more open to that or more doting or more attentive, then he wouldn't have done X, Y, Z. And okay, we can look back at how this dynamic created or invited this experience, but it's not a fault. That doesn't mean that it's anyone's fault. And you get to look at that and say, okay, who is the woman that I want to be? Yeah. Not just for my next relationship, but for myself. And for me, it always came back to integrity and devotion to love. And devotion to love doesn't necessarily mean devotion to him. It's just it did happen to be an expression of that. And so it's just we often will ask ourselves the questions that don't really serve us. What could I have been better? What could I have been?
Yes, exactly. And integrity is everything to me, my own integrity, like integrity to myself. I always, when I, like I recently, I've lost a couple of, lost is the wrong word, but some friendships have ended that have been long. And so my divorce was a long time ago, but these are friendships that came after that. And they were an important part actually of my healing journey and the life that I've created, and they're over. And I've experienced some of the feelings that I experienced during my divorce. And I'm much more aware now than I was then. I got divorced about 16 years ago, and I just didn't know then what I know now. Or I didn't have the awareness. But I really, first of all, I handled both of them better than I did my divorce, I will absolutely say. But I also have had to really face my own truth in a different way, because it's like, there goes my ego talking to me. There goes my ego thinking that I'm better than them, or questioning, you know, don't they just see it the right way? In other words, my way, or, you know, like, so there's a bit of that. Yeah. I don't know exactly how, you know, but ego showing itself. And I think the fact that I can see it is really good.
Yes.
But yeah, it, and I'm trying to bring that learning actually to my clients as well. And I'm hearing it very much in what you're talking about. You might not be using the word ego, but it's, you know, it's stopping that, the blaming and the, why didn't, you know, what could I have done differently? And I think women especially tend to be very, what did I do wrong?
We blame ourselves.
It most likely has nothing to do directly with you or me or whoever. It's about them. It's their journey that's calling them away and or causing the conflict. It's just so few of us are able to go through it in the way that you and Ryan are. And I, the unfortunate thing that often happens is that blame is thrown around, not, you know, very possibly in, for example, a heterosexual relationship. And if the man is leaving for some reason, he might actually use some of those, like, well, you never wanted to have sex, so you can't blame me for cheating. I'm just using that as an example. But so of course the woman will really internalize that. And there's many. And so I think it's, again, it's difficult not to, but
even under the perfect circumstances, seemingly, but you know, I think, so for example, a lot of things that came up for me was, okay, it's not that you were lacking being desired. I desired you. I made it very clear. You felt fulfilled and sometimes even a little bit overwhelmed by how much you were wanted. You were accepted. You were loved. You were provided for. You didn't have to work even. You had permission to just go on your spiritual journey for years and were really required the bare minimum as far as logistics go and family. And you know, and I when I really saw the reality of, I did everything that I could have done, that doesn't mean I'm perfect, but that means I really honor myself for following my integrity and speaking truth when I needed to, and loving even through challenging circumstances and really seeing the fruit of it too. And still he had to go on his path, which honestly was deeper for me because my father left when I was 14. My
Okay.
mom wanted a divorce. I saw him attempt to end his life, and then he was taken to be institutionalized in Peru, which is where I'm from. I never saw him again. So I thought, oh my God, I am repeating my trauma. My kids are living my trauma. And I had to have multiple messages from my spirit guides and from the universe and from friends telling me this is not the same. And there's nothing you could have done as a 14-year-old to make it easier for him. This was his path. And so when I saw that I had actually made it as easy as possible for Ryan, and he was so loved and so devoted to, and he still had to go, I thought, okay, I surrender it. I surrender. It does help to let go when you know that you were in integrity with yourself. Now, I know that a lot of women don't really begin this deeper self-inquiry until after. So they think, oh, if only I would have been more self-aware, if I would have been more communicative, if I would have had better boundaries in place. Yes, and sure, but this is how it was meant to be for you.
Yeah.
And so now you get to learn these things and maybe acknowledge if there's something that you feel like you need to clean up on your side of the street.
Yeah.
But there's no blame or shame.
No, and maybe the purpose this partner had in someone's life was to help that person learn those things and to become
yes,
more aware.
Exactly.
Maybe I'll say to people, because things were so hostile and difficult, but like when things went down and he, whatever, it was not good.
Yeah.
And
yes.
so it's, I believe his purpose in my life was to help me create these four gorgeous boys that we have. Like without him, I wouldn't
yes.
have them. And I
yes.
know that I'm supposed to be their mother. So, that was our purpose to be together, was to create these four children. When that was done, the problems began and we eventually split. We were just no longer meant to be together. I'm okay with that. And I say that to the boys, like we had many fun times and we did really love each other when we were together. We loved making the babies and raising, like it was, everybody was wanted and that life was wanted. We just weren't meant to live it out together.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And that
like
is okay. I think that's the part that's most terrifying to the ego is, oh, there's this good thing and I want it to last forever. And
I'm going to do everything I can
it's
to hold
not
on
meant
to it.
To.
No.
Yeah. And go and replay how I could have prevented it so that I can keep myself from ever experiencing this pain again, which is impossible.
It is impossible. And I think also in our effort to prevent a possible divorce, and trying to make it work and hold on to something that is starting to falter. Because of course, divorce doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time.
Right.
And I think we lose ourselves in that process of trying to hold on to something, because not only do we lose ourselves, but we almost force the other person to lose themselves too, because we're trying to pull them into our story. This is the story that I had envisioned for us. And here's where I want you to fit, because here's where I am. And so you should fit right beside me. And so we have to change them and or ourselves to make this story work together, which I'm sure you were faced with Ryan is, either I have to change or he has to be, either one of us has to give up something. And in the process of asking someone to give up something, you're giving up your integrity.
Yeah.
You're giving up your truth, right? Because
and it just
you don't
does
want
not
to be
work.
That person. No,
it doesn't work. It might get the relationship to continue, but then at what cost? It's not worth it.
Exactly. No, these are such good points. And I, you mentioned, you had gone on this journey with him and created this a very safe space for him to explore himself, his spirituality. Did you ever, again, ego question, did you ever feel like I supported you and helped you create all this for yourself, and now that you figured it all out, your only way out is like away from me?
I didn't think I shouldn't have done it, but I did think like, well, fuck you, man. Like I literally gave you everything. And you just, this is what you want. But I could see the perfection in it though. Cause I have been given this higher vision too of what I am here to do. And I, in full faith, was completely invested in this marriage, not hoping, but just trusting that wherever the path led, it would be perfect for both of us.
Yeah.
And part of me hoping that, he would be more of a part of this vision, more, on a bigger scale in the way that I have had it in my heart. And I think that also he felt a little bit more of that he knew that I wanted that. He knew that I did. And so again, he wanted to, I feel like on a deeper level, free me as much as he wanted to on the outside himself be more free. But yeah, it did feel unfair. I will say the one that I was the most furious with was the universe, was God, however we want to define this. It's like, why would you blind me to this until it did feel like it happened overnight. If we were about to have sex and this thing came up, that's how we were. And I felt so betrayed and blindsided by the universe because I live in full faith of my connection with that.
Yeah.
And that is what led me to discover the particular thing that was the catalyst. That's not something I went looking for. And it revealed a whole alternate reality that was real to him and not real to any of the rest of us. And so, and when I saw how deep it actually was for him and how real it was for him, I just, that was kind of a string of things unraveling and recognizing that there were things that I just hadn't seen yet. And by design, because I wasn't meant to see them yet. There was no ominous sense of doom impending. Something's coming, something bad. It was just, it just was like ripping off a Band-Aid. So it was pretty intense. That whole first week, I felt physically disoriented. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I felt dizzy. I felt nauseous. I was like, what is happening? And just trying to function was nearly impossible.
Yeah, no, that's
and you
similar
know,
to everyone, I would think.
Yeah. So, and that's grief.
Yeah.
So that's,
oh, it's so many things. It's just such a, there's been such a shock to the system, all of it. You know,
Your whole reality is crumbling.
Everything. It's truly like a massive earthquake of some kind. You know, it's just everything has been turned upside down. Nothing feels safe or solid anymore. And everything that we've been taught to believe in and that we do believe in or chosen to believe in has proven to not be in some way. And that's because we have adopted other people's belief patterns or expectations of us or whatever. And I think so many, and I'm sure you're raising your kids differently than this, but I think, you know, we don't teach our kids to go within and find their truth. We teach our kids to follow the rules and to, there are certain things you do and there's a certain way that you do them and you don't do this and you do this. But none of those things really help you when you're faced with something like this, like divorce. When somebody comes and tells you that they want to end the marriage, or I've met someone else, or you just discover it as I did, like, again, was our marriage great? No, but I never thought that's where we were going until I found text messages. And what made me even look, you know, like I'd never looked at his phone before, but for some reason there was just some changes in his behavior that just made me look. And I was meant to find out. So, but there's nothing that prepares you for that. Like nothing.
No. And well, it is not there's nothing you can do yourself to prepare for that. Can't catastrophize it ahead. And that doesn't help anyway. That only makes you suffer.
No, it's an incredible shock to the system. But as we come out of these things, I think, you know, and this is such a big part of what I do. Like I don't in any way minimize the pain that's felt and the emotions that need to be dealt with and felt. But I'm very much about the, okay, so what are we going to do now? Like, how are we going to move this needle forward? Because we can sit in that pain and we can just be that pain because people
that
start
becomes
to identify.
A new identity.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly. It's like, I am a devastated, heartbroken failure of a person.
I was cheated on or a victim.
Some way. Yeah. You can't expect me to be happy. This happened to me. Right. And I meet women who've been through it like 5 years ago.
Yeah, and, same. I'm meeting them now. Like it's been this many years and I'm still not feeling okay.
And that's where my coaching, like that's very much what I focus on. It's like, okay, well, let's just kind of blow up that victim place rather, and then let's find a new place, not necessarily blow it up, but let's start putting
our past.
Yeah, let's look forward. Like let's just start creating something that feels better, right? And here are the many different ways that you can do that. I guess as you do that, as you create your future, I know it's still what I would consider very early days for you, but because of the work that you do and have been doing for years and what you know and your consciousness and awareness, I will ask you anyway, Do you feel any
I know where
sense
this is
of,
going.
do you feel any sense of like relief or space that is being opened, like doors that are being opened for you as a result of this? Are you starting to feel that, wow, I didn't realize this is now an option for me? Or, and I'm
yeah,
not even talking,
well,
I'm not talking about new relationships, but I'm talking about like
yeah,
life.
Yeah, but
here.
just in general, I think the biggest surprise that none of us at home expected was, and this was a double-edged sword to feel and really, really be honest about, was that as his presence had so much love, it was palpable. Anyone who met him in person, they could feel the presence, they could feel the love, the genuineness of it. And also for us living with him, right, we didn't realize how much energy was going into, especially me, how much of my energy was going into making sure that he was emotionally grounded and mentally here. And not that it was that way all the time. It's just the knowing that it could happen at any second and you kind of got to brace yourself. So I didn't realize how much of my energy had gone to that, actually our entire marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to blame him or to say there's anything wrong with him. It's just, I did not see it. And if anything, when I did realize that, there were some moments, of course, honoring the ways, the things that come up, and acknowledging, confronting this feeling of blaming myself for not having recognized this so many years ago, or for not having recognized this and encouraged him to get support with it, things like that. So yeah, there is definitely a lightness. There is a feeling of just very deep, I am. And I had that already for a number of years, but it was, I am. And also like all my heart has been so open, not just to him, but to love and to the universe and to the magic and the miracles and the blessings, that just, I can't be anything but that. So I have kept my heart wide open throughout this whole process and not shut down, even when it felt like I was literally dying. I just can't close it. I can't. It just that I know that that would not be in service to what I'm here to do and who I am. And so, yeah, I have noticed some different opportunities and things come in that even just an energy of freshness, a lightness, and people coming into my energetic field and people that I'm meeting and getting to spend time with, and friendships going even deeper. And I'm already very close with my close friends.
Yeah.
So really seeing how much community I have around me, that has been really, really beautiful.
And that is really one of the great things that come out of crisis. I find any kind of crisis, you do really learn who is there for you and who isn't, who's in, willing to get in there with you and who isn't, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, not a criticism of those who aren't. It's just, you just discover who's not there. And who won't be there for you. And that's okay. It's good to know those things. I guess, so in this, you know, this bit of lightness, I know not just from your posts, you know, we all feel like we know your life, right? Because we follow you on your Instagram, but that's the reality of it. So if I remember correctly, Ryan has moved out now, right? He's
yes.
gone. You mentioned the sweaters being gone. Did that, even that physical space, feel like more open, more light, more,
oh yes, yes,
because
so
of
when
the
I say
things
it
that you
feels
just
lighter,
explained?
It's that,
yeah
yeah, it's not even that the items, I actually, the first maybe week that he was gone, I kept his pillow and his blanket on the bed because I just felt like I'm not ready to put that away yet. And but just having him physically not in the day-to-day space, that's where I felt the lightness. That's where we all felt it. And our kids are noticing, like, wow, I just feel like I can breathe lighter. And that was hard, a hard reality to acknowledge, because that, does that mean that it was too heavy when he was around? Was it, you know, so we got to have those conversations.
Yeah.
And then clearing out the stuff in the room, rearranging things, cleaning out the garage, which is actually something he'd been wanting to do for over a year. And I finally just did, I just felt like I couldn't help but do it. I had a wave of energy and I thought, this is what I'm doing. And so things like that, they help really freshen up and feel lighter.
Yeah, it's amazing how things can hold people's energy, if you will, right? It's just,
yes.
and how we need to clear that space. I remember my kids coming to me. It wasn't right away either. Like it took probably, you know, some months before they noticed. My two oldest when we separated were 15 and 17. And my twins were 11. And I remember the 17-year-old coming to me one day. He actually was mad at me because he said, "You used to get so mad at me and be so strict with me about this and this. And I see you just letting like my brothers do whatever." And and I'm like, I thought he's right. Like, because I was under so much more pressure and again, kind of like you balancing this slightly volatile kind of personality.
Trying to keep the equilibrium.
Yeah. Just keeping everything calm.
Keep the intensity more. Yeah.
Well, so I was always just a little bit higher, I guess. So I was less patient. I was less tolerant of someone stepping outside of the rules, right? Like, I don't know, whatever it was. and I remember I just remember saying to him, I'm like, I'm sorry. I said, I think I just was under a lot more pressure than I realized. And that's all it's all I can say. He wasn't wrong. I couldn't tell him he was wrong because he wasn't. And I remember my second one, and this took about a year for him to say it. He goes, "Mom, you laugh so much. Why don't you remember you laughing so much when you were with that?" I'm like, I didn't even know what to say because I'm trying not to say anything negative about their dad, right? Maybe he wasn't all that funny.
Well, they noticed.
But there's no question that I changed. And that was actually, I remember the day he moved out. I remember driving home that day. Like, I remember stretching my neck and seeing down the road that his car was gone. So I knew he'd left now and he was gone. And I felt so much joy and lightness. I remember going to my therapist a couple of days later, like my weekly visit, and saying to him, because he goes, "How are you doing?" I'm so fucking happy. And I said, "I'm the only one though." I said, "Everybody else is crying. He's crying. The kids are crying." I'm like, I have to hide it. Like bouncing. The lightness I felt was, it was like when they talk about that, I just lost 150 pounds. It was just like, I was floating, but it kind of came down again. Like my feet touched the ground again. It's not, but anyway, it was interesting is what it was. It's an interesting experience. I'm going to pull us a little bit in a different direction, because one of the things that drew me, unless there's something more you want to add to this part.
Oh, no, this is fine. Yeah.
One of the things I think, I don't even remember how I came across, somebody probably shared one of your posts and I found it interesting and I went onto your profile and started following you. But there's no question that you used to share a lot of very sexy photos and imagery and also writing about your life with Ryan. And, you know, I'm remarried and I can't say that we have that. And so there's a part of me that would follow it and it's like, oh, how would you cultivate that? And so anyway, so then here we are, fast forward, and now you're getting divorced. And because I'm sure I'm not the only one who followed you because of those things, have you received, I have several questions on this topic, but this is one of them. Have you received any kind of backlash or like?
Oh yeah. Yeah. People's abandonment wounds were severely triggered. Yeah. And not only that, but thinking, oh my God, if they did this and they were both doing this deep work, then what chance do I have?
Exactly.
So I really want people to not let that be the takeaway, but to see two people who are just deeply honoring themselves, even at the cost of a whole marriage. Mm-hmm. And then there were some people who said, well, you clearly still love each other, so why don't you just stay together? And you know, I didn't feel the need to spend a lot of energy explaining things to people, but just simply saying, this is what we both know is best for us and for our family.
Yeah.
And just leaving it at that. But yeah, there was a lot. And I remember even thinking, oh my God, should I delete everything that I've ever posted of us? But and we talked about it. And I said, how do you feel about it? Because I will be, you know, at some point, I do envision myself being with someone again and being married and having this deeply devoted monogamous relationship that's also kinky and also erotically expressive, but we're here with each other one day. And we decided, you know, this feels like it's part of the history. It's part of my story and all of the different learnings that I've had throughout our marriage. So I think, okay, we're going to let that stay there. And all of the passion, all of the love, all of the connection that was just palpable between us. What's interesting is that once my heart was no longer in it, once I knew that this is not this is not my husband anymore. The romantic feelings just came back into me. And
isn't it interesting how that happens?
Yeah. It was like,
I believe that's experienced more by women than men. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think so. And I know that on the different the different spectrum of sexuality, not as in if you're attracted to men or women, but as in I would consider myself more of a demisexual, which I have to have that my heart has to be fully in it for me to be sexually attracted to and sexually aroused by someone. So it wasn't until I really fell in love with his soul way back in the day that came online. It wasn't like, oh, there's this hot guy. And, you know, so I recognized that about myself. And once that wasn't there, then that did make it easier for me to move through the letting go process, because once I knew that was going to be our last time having sex, and it went into it with that knowing, and it felt like a very big closure to our bodies. It felt like an important closure, a goodbye. And then I just, that desire dwindled. And there wasn't this, even though he was still in the house for a few more weeks, there wasn't this pull of like, oh, I can't keep my hands off of him. I just, this is my brother and I love him so much. And he will forever be my brother.
He's the father of your children, right?
And yes, and this. Yeah.
I try to tell my clients this often, like it's still loving your ex does not mean you need to be with them. It doesn't mean that they're right for you. And it doesn't make you weak. It's just like, it's okay to want to be away from them and to love them. Like, you don't have to stop loving them and you don't have to hate them for divorce to be right.
Yes.
But I think I love how you've explained that. And it's, I think, you know, again, I didn't have the awareness and the consciousness that you have at that point in my life. But I remember my ex-husband had an affair, had been going on for a year. So, I mean, that was the end of us. Yeah, no, it was the second time as well. So that was like, we're done here.
Yeah, this is
but,
done.
But I remember having sex with him one more time. And I told this story in my Facebook group because I want people to, because I think a lot of us do have sex one more time at least, right? Like, it's just, I think if nothing else, because emotions are so high, it's a release, if nothing else. Like, it's a, like, you know, some women will express, we're having the best sex we've ever had, but I don't want to be with him. It's a release. Like, that's okay. You're using each other's bodies to get rid of emotions. And that's, if
the body holds emotions.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. But I meant, for me, it wasn't anything to do with that. For me, it was all ego because he'd been cheating. I was like, I remember sitting and looking at him.
Your body didn't feel safe?
No, but I remember thinking, I bet you'll still have sex with me. And so I was like, I literally just walked up to him. I said, want to have sex? He said, yes. So we did. The second I was done, I was like, okay, so now I know I'm done here. I'm never doing this again. And there was nothing. Yeah. I didn't feel bad. I didn't feel
you just knew.
Gross or anything. I was totally in control of myself the whole time. But it was just, it was very ego-driven. It was nothing beautiful about it. but closure, nonetheless, it was my way of kind of going, I at least I can control this part of myself because I'm also a very passionate human being. And the fear can really hit you there. You know, it's like, you don't want to talk about not feeling good enough. And she was 10 years younger than me and, you know, blah, 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 right?
No.
Like it hit every stereotype, story. But suddenly I was that story. No. But, and it's unfortunately the story for a lot of people, but I think a lot of people end up having affairs because they don't know how else to create something that they need inside the relationship. So they just go and find somewhere themselves. Else. I actually think it's laziness more than anything.
Yes.
I really do.
Sarah Perel says that people cheat to experience or access a part of themselves.
Yeah.
There's something that they want to experience of themselves. It's how they are.
But the reality is, if they really, really wanted to do the really hard work, they could probably find a way to do that with their partner. But that's
to access they don't know that how, within their they relationship.
Don't, yeah. Feels scary. Yeah. It feels whatever for whatever reason. Yeah. So they
and
just
it
go
is very vulnerable.
Away.
It is vulnerable. And I've seen this in working with men and working with couples so much that the men are, there's a whole other set of challenges that they deal with and does not make it okay what a lot of these men, you know, do or choose. And yet it's just, that's why I acknowledge I acknowledge these men big time when they do come for help, when they do, you know, open for support.
Yeah.
Because that's a big step.
Yeah.
But anyways, it could be a whole other conversation.
Yeah, that is a whole other conversation. So I guess just before we close out today, and I just wanted to also touch on, you know, for a lot of the women that are in my world they're a little bit later in life, like late 40s, 50s, even 60s. They have marriages behind them that are 25, 30, even 40 years, you know, depending on how early they got married. And so some of them have never been with anyone else. They might have gained weight. They've had children. You know, they go through all of that. And you also happen to be stunningly gorgeous and a dancer and pole dancer. And I mean, I look at you and I'm like, oh my God, if I ever wore something like that and started wrapping myself around the pole in my house, my boys would like disown me as a mother. But of course, there's that part of yourself that's like, oh God, I wish I could though.
Oh, you could. So,
of course. It's just finding that part in ourselves. And what could you say to women who feel, because of, again, social norms and how they view their bodies, how can you help them understand that they're still so sexual and attractive and there for that experience? Like this is not attached to what we look like. Do you have a message for them?
This is that's my specialty, ladies. So just FYI, that's the work that I do with women. So it's calling back to yourself, your power, your pleasure, reclaiming your erotic essence. Your life force energy, your sexual energy is the source of your creativity, of your creation, your ability to bring things into the world, birth things into the world, not just humans, but whatever it is that you're here feeling called to do. And for me, you know, that journey back to myself, back to my womb, back to my pleasure began years ago as well. So that I started to learn that my pleasure was not existent for my husband, that my body wasn't, my sexual energy wasn't for him. It wasn't dependent on him. And it was actually me unlocking this within myself that unlocked a whole other level in our sex life and in our relationship, because I went there in myself. And it takes a lot of self-devotion, I will say, and a lot of self-compassion. Because when women start doing this deeper work and discovering all of this shame that they've internalized from society, from religion, from relationships, from parents, about their desire being shameful or sinful or dirty, their pleasure being bad, their bodies being temptation to men, stumbling blocks, the feelings of being unsafe, existing as a human woman in this world, and all of the projections of being too much, being not enough, be sexier. Yeah. No, that's too sexy. So you really got to journey deep into this heart space, into this womb space of who am I? What feels real for me? And how do I just give myself the gift of opening to my own pleasure? And so that's where I have a self-pleasure course that was just focused on that. And then other ones that are all about feminine embodiment, wild feminine, sovereign feminine. But that is really, that can look different for everyone. For me, it involved pole dancing, learning how to pole dance and learning how to move in my body, because I wasn't allowed to dance growing up in my family culture. And I have scoliosis. I still do. And so I learned that it was unsafe to do things in my body that were, and also it was too sexual. And that's bad. So that begin doing the things that feel a little bit edgy, but that don't push you too far over the edge to feel unsafe in your body. There's a fine line there, and you got to find it for yourself, for anyone listening. But even if you're not presenting it out to the world, just doing it for yourself, like just dancing in front of a mirror in ways that you kind of feel a little embarrassed in front of yourself, you know, or wearing something that feels a little bit edgy, that is like, I don't know, this doesn't quite feel like me, but it feels like a me that I want to be.
Okay.
Expressively.
Yeah.
But really nourishing our bodies and connecting with our pleasure, and in whatever way or ways that may be.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. You know, so I'm here in Costa Rica because I'm running a retreat and for women.
Yes.
And last year was the first year we did it, and we're doing it again this year. We had ecstatic dance one night. And wow. It was interesting. So they embraced it. Like, they were a little bit shy in the beginning. I said to them, there'll be no cameras. I will not be taking any pictures of this event at all. Nobody's allowed to have their phones, like, put them away. And so we just turned on the music, and I said, you can dance with your eyes closed or open. You can sit and rock or stand and go crazy. You can do whatever you want. Like, there are no rules here.
Yes.
Look down, look up, close your eyes, do whatever you need to do to feel comfortable moving. We had like the ocean and the jungle around us. So I said, turn and face the beautiful nature that we have. If you don't want to face other people, right? Like, whatever you need to do to feel you can move freely. And there were a couple of interesting things that happened. One of them was, one woman I noticed wasn't moving. So I finally went up to her and I just said, you're not going to join us? And she goes, I can't. I said, why? And she goes, I'm too embarrassed. I said, don't be. I said, we're not, look at everybody. She goes, no, I'm embarrassed for everyone else. I'm judging and I don't feel right doing that. Uh-huh. I said, oh, okay. So I said, so there was like an upper level. I said, you can hear the music up there. What if you go up there and you can't see us? She goes, okay. I said, but you promised me you'll dance. She goes, okay. And then when you hear what I'm done, you'll come back down. So that's what she did. I thought that was so honest of her. But see, that's part of our teaching. It's like, she was judging others. So she knew if she started dancing, she felt she would be judged as well. I mean, that was really what was in there. Yeah, but then there was another woman too. She started off really careful and then she got going. And at the end of it, she goes, Elizabeth, she goes, her husband had passed away a few years ago. So she goes, I haven't had sex in 3 years. And she said, and I was okay with that. I was like, I'm never having sex again. She said, I was fine with that at my age. Who cares? And she goes, Elizabeth, I need to go home and find myself a man. She goes, you woke
it's like
me
I
up.
Awakened my sacral energy.
it was the event that happened to be on like a second day there in the evening. It was perfect. It was so early. It cracked open the whole retreat. Like, it just opened everybody. Women, I swear, not that men weren't, but we were born to move our hips and dance. Like, that's why I said, like, if all you do is move your hips, like, just start moving your hips. Like, just, you know,
it doesn't have to be crazy choreography.
Just dance. Flow. Like, no rules. Go crazy. Don't go crazy. Do whatever, but just do something. Just move. So it was an incredible awakening for a lot of them. Can't wait to do it again. But it really speaks to pushing your comfort zone, you know, getting to that edge and letting, because I think we all like to dance. We all feel good when we dance. We had to get over the dancing in front of other people part. I don't know why we're so silly about it.
No, because it's like, oh, am I a good dancer? I'm a bad dancer.
What is a good dancer?
What even is a good dancer? A good dancer is a confident dancer who loves their body and how it moves and lets it do what it wants to do. They're having fun. It's not a, you know, rigid. I remember we started watching dancing videos on YouTube of these dance studios, and they would do these, you know, dance classes. And then at the end, they would film the students that they chose to be in the video. And this was, 8 years ago. And we would watch that in the mornings. You know, the kids would watch that when they were getting ready for school and just get inspired by, what is it about this dancer that really, you know, speaks to me? Oh, their eyes are so expressive and they're not the ones getting every step correctly, perfectly, but they're feeling it. It's soulful. And so, one of the practices I still do to this day is every morning, my first part of my morning practice is movement. And yes, there's great, you get BDNF in the brain, it's exercise, you get all this, you know, your blood vessels, your blood pumping, but in an energetic and spiritual level, it's just like, you're opening up the channels. And that continues. So again, that's one thing too, that women can do, begin doing and move in so many different ways.
Just dancing and exploring their sensuality, doing that, you know, stop attaching their attractiveness and their sensuality to how they look. It's about what comes through your eyes. It's about how you move your body. It's about how you feel in your body. It's how other people are going to feel about your body, I would say.
Yes.
And it's allowing ourselves to believe that even though we're not perfect and we have stretch marks and we've gained weight or whatever, we're still sexual beings and that that is still available to us if we want it. Yes. And I think that's as women go through divorce and the older they are when they do, and depending on how they look, it is such a difficult place for them to start. And just the thought then, they say that, you know, I never want to meet another man, but I know behind a lot of that is he's going to want to have sex and there's no way I can do that. So there's a lot of that fear in women, a lot of shame around that.
But, and so much too, when you get into that body, that part of yourself, you unlock all of this. Like, I'm celibate, right? I haven't had sex. I'm not planning on going out. I have no desire to.
Yeah, well, you said you need to be soul connected to someone, right?
Yes, I need to be. Yeah. I have that soul connection, and I have that soul connection with myself, and I continue to connect sexually with myself. And when I do that, I'm actually connecting with this bigger energy that is nourishing me and purifying me and just giving so much life to me. So it's not just masturbating, you know, it's an experience, and it's a deeply devotional one.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that can take steps for women to be able to do that, to open to that experience, even with themselves, because there can be so many levels of shutdown for self-protection.
Yeah. Yeah. Depending on their past and whatever they've been taught and their belief systems, all of those.
Yeah.
Before we go, Lucy, first of all, you know, this has been such a wonderful conversation, and I would love for you to share with my listeners some of these programs you've mentioned as we've been talking. If you don't mind, just kind of running through what it is that you offer and where they can find you.
Yes. So all the current offerings will be at lucylampe.com. That's my website. And you can find me on Instagram at lucylampe. And yes, the number one bundle that I've been, that women have been enrolling in most recently is the Wildly Embodied Self-Love Bundle. So that includes six different courses. The self-pleasure course, which is a conscious self-pleasure course, helping you to heal and expand your experience of your own sexuality. And then I have a wild feminine embodiment course. So we're tapping into those more fiery aspects of our feminine, not just like the soft and nurturing and like, yes, you know, which is great. But yeah, for those women who are like, I have the fire and I don't know how to work with the fire. It's kind of destroying my life right now. That's Wild Eros. And then the newest course that just launched this week is Wildly Sovereign. That one is really integrating the light and the dark feminine and standing in our sovereignty, embodying our boundaries, reclaiming our voice, inner sacred union, all these key pieces. And that bundle also includes a few other courses that have been helpful for women. So some bonus courses. But yeah, so that's the one that I would recommend for anyone here.
That sounds great. Well, I will include a link to Lucy's website in the show notes, so everybody will be able to find you then in that way. And let me just say thank you one more time, honestly, for being here, for giving us this time today and sharing so openly with myself and my listeners. And it's been truly a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me into this space and for the work that you do.
Oh, yeah, no, thank you. This has been fun. Maybe we'll have to talk another day about, I don't know, men.
Part two.
Yeah, part two. Sounds good. So thank you very much. Wow, what a great episode. I am so grateful to Lucy for the time she gave us today and her openness and sharing all that incredible information with us. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I'm sure you did. And I will link everything she talked about in the show notes below. Before I let you go, I wanted to bring your attention back to the retreats that I talked about and the dancing experience. As you know, or maybe know, I'm in Costa Rica right now at the time of recording this in just about almost 2 weeks, not quite 2 weeks. Our next retreat in Costa Rica starts up. It's our Rising Moon Sisters retreat, and I cannot wait to do this again. We have 17 women coming with us, and of course there will be ecstatic dance among other things. When you're listening to this, most likely this is a week, I'm not exactly sure when I'm posting this video, but probably, or this podcast episode, probably right after. So I will be sharing a bigger retreat debrief very soon, because I love to be able to share, at least, you know, even though you couldn't be there, some of the learning that we got from there. But I want to take this opportunity to invite you to open your mind to an experience like that. You know, going to a retreat for a week is an opportunity to do so much of the work that Lucy and I talked about today, to really allow yourself to open, to be in a safe place, guided by myself and my retreat partner in various practices that allow for connecting with these parts of our bodies, not just sexually, not just in one way, but in every way, like getting in touch with that inner wisdom that you heard Lucy talk about, getting in touch with our integrity, our inner truth, the part of us that makes us who we are, the part of us that we probably lost, you know, while we were in the, especially in the downward spiral of the end of our marriage. Or for those of you who listen to this and who are not going through divorce, it, you know, there's so many things in life, so many events that cause us to shut off in some way, to people, to experiences, to life, to opportunities, because of fear, you know, expectations, limitations, you know, lack of faith in ourselves, so much. I want to invite you to come with us on one of these retreats where the opportunity to get in touch with ourselves is so profound, because you're in a safe environment, you're being held by other women, and there is no more creative or deep loving space to be in than a group of women. We'll also be, of course, engaging in all the practices that allow us to connect with that part of ourselves. So really what we're connecting with is our inner truth, right? Our integrity and our pleasure. And pleasure is not just about sex. It's about like enjoying life. It's about knowing what do you enjoy about life? What are the experiences you'd like to have in life going forward? Whether you are 20, 40, 50, 60, 70 years old, it doesn't really matter. You have lots of life left to live. What do you want it to look like? What do you want it to feel like? What kind of experiences do you want to have? What kind of relationships do you want to have with your children that are maybe now adults, your grandchildren, your partner in life, your friends, whoever, yourself? These are the things we get to get in touch with. These things become clear when you go on a retreat, when you go away from your everyday, when you retreat and allow yourself the time to breathe, to exhale, to think, to be, to feel, all of those things. I would like you to join us for one of these experiences. Our next one is in Italy. Yes, beautiful Italy in June, the last week of June, 22nd to 29th. Join our next Rising Moon Sisters retreat. Link will be in the show notes. And have an experience. Have this experience. What we talked about today, have it with us. Retreats are not just about a vacation. They are an experience. It's the only way to describe it. And I can't describe it any better than that unless you've been to one. Then you know. People who go to retreats do it again and again, and there's a reason for that. I would like you to be there. I would like you to have that experience. So that's our next retreat. Then, of course, we're going back to Costa Rica in 2025. So check out our retreat page and see if you can find something that is perfect for you. I'll see you in Italy. Okay, until next time, have a beautiful day.